We've qualified for the World Cup. Go and compete.
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 3 of This Is Football. This episode is sponsored by Tesco's Express. Trev, Scott, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Not too bad, mate. Scott, how are you?
Yeah, all good. Excited for this episode. Big one.
Yeah, second part of the episode. We're delighted to have Darren Maloney on. That's really good interview. So that's coming up in part two. But before we get into that, I suppose we'll get into last week's results, lads, will we?
Yeah, absolutely.
As ever, there wasn't much games on, but the weather caused havoc again, so there was no Dunboyne home matches on. Every match we have is away, so I'll quickly fly through them. Our under-11s lost away to Balbriggan, under-11F. Our under-12 Premier lost 1-0 away to Maynooth. Our under-11A lost 2-1 against Maynooth. Our men's Saturday side lost 3-1 away to Glenville. Our Sunday under-11s lost away to Donnacarney. Under-10B won at home to Bowes. I don't know if we had a home match. That must have been away. Under-11D lost away to Donnacarney. Under-10 girls lost away to McKelvey. Under-16P lost 6-4 away to Kilbarrick. 6-4, geez. Under 11 girls had a win away to Maynooth. And that was all the fixtures that we had for the weekend. Again, the weather's causing havoc.
I think that home game, Paul, is right. It was, would it have been on the Astro? Would it have been 7-a-side or 9-a-side?
Oh, you're right. Yeah, it would have been on the small Astro.
Yeah.
So that's all the results I had for last week. Upcoming fixtures will be all over the socials. So have a look out for the socials. All the fixtures for this week is coming up on the socials. Lads, we get straight into... Oh, Trev, Scott wasn't here last week, so how was our predictions last week?
Actually, Scott wasn't here last week because he's had a Manchester United game. Will we talk about that first?
That's it, that was great. How did they get on?
Scott had a great weekend away because I was talking about this. He had a lovely time. Then 3 o'clock came on the Saturday and I think kind of a dark shadow came over that stadium that's fallen apart called Old Trafford, ironically. Scott, do you want to take over there?
Yeah, the weather, you know, weird you say that the weather did turn the minute the game started, so maybe that was an insight to how my day was going to go. Look, United were pretty diabolical. Fulham were all over them the whole game. United had, the best thing we had was like corners. It was just a really poor performance. And when Fulham changed it, so they obviously went 1-0 up. And then with 10 minutes to go, they went 5 at the back, which I actually turned to my brother and I said, I think that's a mistake because the whole game, Fulham were all over United, creating chances. They looked like the only team that were going to score goals in the game. United got the goal back. And I have to say that the atmosphere in the stadium then just picked up. It was electric. And it's kind of everything you want to. When you go over there, the place is bouncing and you just felt like it was at the Stretford end as well. So you felt like United were just going to suck the ball in and do what they did in the Fergie days and get that late goal. But the harsh reality these days is that the other team goes down the other end and scores. Adama Traore carried the ball pretty much the whole length of the pitch, which is, you know, a cardinal sin. A player like him should be taken down, take a yellow card and a well be slotted away. And the place was very deflated after it. And just sums up United season so far, really, under Erik ten Hag.
All joking aside, can I ask, like you said it there, when United equalised, which, correct me if I'm wrong, was in the last minute or in the 90th minute, what was the feeling like? I mean, obviously, you said it yourself, you were being outplayed for more or less all of the game. Was the vibe in the stadium a bit, or did they stick with them, or what way did it go?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. Like, you usually have, you say the ultras who would just be singing all day and behind the team. But where I was actually sitting not at the Stretford end, but pretty much just to the side of it. And you could sense the frustration in the ground, like you'd people all around you saying stuff I can't repeat on the podcast. But there is that kind of just distastefulness to United at the moment. And you felt that during the game from minute 1 to 90. And then when they got equalized, then all of a sudden the whole stadium was up, which, you know, natural as football fans. But yeah, it was quite weird because it was the first time I went to United game in a good few years, and it's kind of the first time where the atmosphere is kind of being like that. It's kind of being like a bit, ooh, what's going on here? People are questioning, you know, everything from Marcus Rashford to Bruno, what are you doing? And it's the first time I kind of experienced that. So it was different, but I have to say, like, I know they lost, but going over that from minute when they equalized to just before they conceded, the place was rocking, and it honestly was unbelievable to be in the place. You say it's Old Trafford, it's falling down. It did kind of feel like that. The place was absolutely hopping. But ultimately not the result I was looking for going over.
So effectively your whole weekend, which was would have consisted of at least 48 hours, but the best part of it was about 3 minutes when you were drawn a home to Fulham and then it ultimately lost. Thanks for that, Scott. So, Paul, do you want to push on there? I'm sure the people can listen. That's exactly what Scott just said. So I'm delighted.
Yeah, I mean, it's straight facts. Yeah.
That's their job.
Good job. Right, let's go, Trev. Predictions last week. Let's get them out of the way.
Right, okay. So there was only the two of us last week. So we had the first game was Brentford-Chelsea. We both said away. That was a 2-2 draw, so no score there for either of us. Everton-West Ham. You said draw. I said draw. You said West Ham, so you went 1-0 up there. Fulham and Brighton. I said home. You said draw. We're both wrong. No, that's not right, is it?
Yeah, Brighton or bad.
No, I said home, you said draw. So I got that. Ah, so that makes a difference. So it's 1-1 here. So then Newcastle and Wolves, we both said, sorry, you said home.
Brighton, by
Fulham, so I said home. Fulham are at home.
Already, sorry, apologies.
Okay. It is late, lads. Newcastle and Wolves, you said home, I said draw, so Newcastle got that. So that is, so are we then? We're 2-1. Okay. Forest and Liverpool, we both said away. So we both got that. So it's 3-2 to me. Spurs Palace, both said home. We both got that. So obviously 4-3. Luton and Villa, we both said Villa away. So 5-4. Burnley and Bournemouth, you said draw, I said away. So it's 6-4. City and United, we both said home win, that's fair enough, so 7-5. And Sheffield United, Arsenal, we both said away, so 8-6. So I just want to clarify, I won by a clear 2 points there.
Well,
the win is a win, you know. Before we go to predictions, Scott, sorry now again, but obviously the standout game on paper anyway was the City and United game. I didn't get to see all of it. I did see the United goal after about, what was it, 3 or 4 minutes, and I genuinely didn't see anything else other than that. What do you think?
Yeah, it was a one-way traffic the whole game. I mean, it was just typical City at home. They just, I know, Rashford scored an unbelievable goal. It kind of came out of nothing in that sense. It was the only shot on target United had throughout the whole game. And City, what they do at home, they just put you in a chokehold and the pressure just cracked. You didn't manage to see Haaland's miss, so that was unbelievable. He was literally underneath the goal and somehow put it over the bar. It was just, you know, one of those things, just
break things, yeah.
You see the goal before it happens and it didn't go in and you're just like, what happened there? It was one of the most unbelievable misses I've ever seen, but look, he got his goal in the end. I've never seen, I know City have battered United before, like 6-1, 7-1, whatever, over the last few years, but that was just as bad, that performance, in terms of United had nothing going forward. Rashford scored the goal, but after that, he really didn't do anything. And then when he came off, they had absolutely no outlet whatsoever. So it was it's not great being a United fan, especially with City, how great they are. But it was just kind of depressing viewing, to be honest.
Sorry, Scott, we'll leave you alone for this week before you get off.
Two losses, yeah. Come on to the podcast and talk about your team losing twice, you know. Thanks very much, lads.
get off that ledge. Will we just go straight into the prediction? Okay, the same as last week.
Predictions.
Predictions for this week. Will we go for it? Right, so...
Well, let's get it out of the way. Come on.
Right, Man United and Everton.
United win.
United win by Scott. What'd you say, Paul?
Everton.
Right, I'm going to say draw. Bournemouth, Sheffield United. Bournemouth.
Bournemouth.
Yeah, I'll go Bournemouth as well.
Crystal Palace and Luton. I'm gonna go Luton.
I'm gonna go draw.
I'll go Luton as well.
Okay, Wolves Fulham.
Draw.
Fulham.
Draw. Arsenal Brentford.
Arsenal.
Yeah, Arsenal.
Same. Villa Spurs. Oh, that's on the Sunday now, 1 o'clock. That's a good game. That's a game neither can afford to lose, to be honest with you. And actually, draws no use to either of them either.
I think Villa is going to win, but no, do you know what? I'm going to change. I'm going to go Spurs.
For Villa, I think Villa home.
I go Spurs. I think Spurs need to win that to have any chance to keep with Villa and the fourth place. Yeah, I'll go Villa. Brighton and Forest.
Home win, I suppose, if you don't know.
Yeah,
home win.
Brighton.
Yeah. West Ham and Burnley.
Mismatch, aren't they?
West Ham.
West Ham.
Liverpool, Manchester City.
It has to be City, lads. I'm sorry, but that, I think.
No, no, that's what you feel. Yeah.
Yeah, my kids.
I think City are hitting that form now where they usually do this time of year. They just romp off like 12 victories, so I'll go City as well.
I'll go draw. I think I can't see Liverpool winning, but I can see City winning. I'll hope for the draw. And I'm happy to lose out on that one if Liverpool win and I don't get that point. Happy days. And then on Monday night, Chelsea Newcastle. That'd be a tasty enough game as well.
You just don't know with Chelsea, don't you?
Or you don't know with Newcastle. But Newcastle are strong at home, but they're not great on the road. Newcastle. Yeah, I'm going Newcastle, yeah.
I'm gonna go Chelsea at home.
Okay.
I'm gonna go Chelsea as well.
Okay. Well, that's fine. That's all the fixtures upcoming. We also have, we didn't do it last week. We won't go through last week's results because we're tight on time because Dara's interview coming up is quite lengthy. So we'll just fly through predictions for the League of Ireland for Friday. So we have Bows and Shells.
Bows win.
Shells.
Deluded. Shells. I'm going to go Shells. Good Bows fan here.
Yeah,
Derry. Talgan.
You're
going against Liverpool, but now you're going against Bows.
Yeah, well, it's Bows.
Yeah.
Derry and Waterford. I'm going to go draw.
Waterford are going well.
I'm going to go Waterford.
No, but that plastic pitch up there, I give it to Derry.
Is Waterford at home, Eddie?
No, Derry at home.
Sorry. No, I'm going to say go Waterford.
Alright, Galway and Drogheda.
Home win, Galway.
Yeah. Galway. Pats and Dundalk.
This is two teams in a mini crisis at the moment.
It has to be Pats though at home.
Yeah, I'll go Pats as well. Dundalk with a weird result there against Sligo, losing 5-0, so I'll go Pats.
Pats.
Paul? Yeah, I looked at that result and I wanted to see, was there a couple of people sent off or something? Because it just seemed, you don't see that scoreline a lot in the League of Ireland. It was a bit of a mad one.
4-0 at half time or something?
Yeah.
4-0 at half time. And if you look at the highlights, there's some of the goals Dundalk gave away. I mean, lads, you'd absolutely crucify your 13s. It was some of the defending. Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, that doesn't get them very far. So that's the. The lot for this week, Paul, I think. We've
one more game.
Yeah.
One more game, sorry. Sligo, okay. Shamrock Rovers.
Oh, that's on the Saturday.
Oh, that's on the, oh, that's on the Saturday, is it?
Yeah,
okay.
Sligo playing on the Saturday, yeah.
Sligo and who?
Rovers.
It's a Rovers derby. Sligo Rovers, Shamrock Rovers.
I'm gonna go
Shamrock Rovers. They have to click into gear soon enough. I said that last week and they got a draw, but
I'm gonna go for a draw. I don't think they're ready to bounce back yet. I think they're more of a City team to kick going halfway through the season and kick on, because they done it last year. They were what, 11 points behind Rovers or Bowes?
Yeah, it? Yeah, and then they beat Bowes in Dalier, and that was the start of
the
rest of the season. Pretty much.
Sligo has been a surprise package this year, but I actually think Shamrock Rovers will kickstart their season. I think they'll get the win.
Okay.
Let's go draw. Okay. So, listen up for part two for a great interview with Darren Maloney. Darren has covered some massive sporting events over the years, including 3 World Cups, the 2022 World Cup final in Qatar, 3 European Championships, plus a number of Champions League games, to name a few. He is also a regular commentator on the GAA. He's covered the Olympic Games, RTE's Irish Fitness Families. He is, if not, one of the best commentators of all time. Darren, welcome to the podcast.
How much do I owe you for that introduction?
That's a setup, isn't it?
Slipping in the DMs.
Yeah, I'm in trouble there now.
Welcome to the podcast, mate. Delighted to have you on.
Great to be here.
We'll start off with Trev. Trev, you had a question there for Darren, so we'll let you go first.
I have a couple of questions, Darren. Normally we don't script stuff, but I have a few things that I want to get off my chest and ask you. Well, firstly, obviously, before we get anywhere, how did you start out in the industry? I mean, literally all those years ago. How long are you with the RTE? 1994, 1995? Correct me if I'm wrong.
95. I did 4 years in radio. And then the television thing came around in 99. So, it's a long time. It's a very long time. So, yeah, 95 in radio and then joined television in 99. And it's funny, we're kind of like we're back doing bits and pieces of radio, which is great. Like I kind of would fill in the odd time on the Saturday or the Sunday, and we get to do some GA commentaries on the radio as well, which is fun. Different because, and I suppose I still do it, the if somebody's listening on the radio, like, silence is your enemy. You've got to keep talking and painting these pictures and describing everything that you see. So silence is not good on the radio because the person listening doesn't have a clue what's going on. And then on the television, the person can already see it. So you're trying your damnedest to, just be an aid to what they're watching, because they can already see it. And just the obvious things like left side, right side, left foot, right foot, you don't need to do that unless it's somebody. You know, like I did a match yesterday with Conor McCarthy from Monaghan, and he scored a nice point on his right foot. And I kind of said he's used his right foot just because he's predominantly left footed. But, you know, look, you try and not annoy the hell out of people. So that's an art in itself, I think, you know. But getting into it, oh God, how long do you have? I studied journalism, used to do kind of a hospital radio and stuff around where I grew up. Volunteering and a few kind of community radio things. North Dublin Community Radio was one. So I grew up in Beaumont, near enough to the hospital. So we did a load of stuff with that. And then just kind of, I was interested in it from the kind of journalism point of view. And okay, sport was my interest, but I never kind of thought you could make a living out of it because, like, in those days, in, you know, the early 90s, there wasn't that much live sport on the television. And also, like, there was a huge appetite for it, but, you know, I suppose when Sky came along, it changed everything in terms of people's appetite to see live sport. And like RTE, we're doing some stuff, but even if you go back to those days, like the early 90s, like in terms of GA stuff on the television, there was very, very few live games. I think certainly into the late 80s, like if you think of the Dublin Meath saga, the 4 games in 1991, like I, from memory, I remember listening to a couple of them. I couldn't get tickets, but I remember listening to a few of them on the radio. I don't think they were covered live. And in those days, you just had the 2 All-Ireland semi-finals in football and hurling and the 2 All-Ireland finals covered live. And the rest was all stuff that you saw on the Sunday game on a Sunday night. So it has changed dramatically. And it's just the appetite that people have for sport, and they want to see stuff. They want to see live sport. So I suppose that just kind of, it took off from there. I worked in FM 104 with Con Murphy after I came out of college and got my qualification and all that stuff, and worked with Con Murphy in FM 104. And then I went to RTE then in 95, when a colleague of mine, a man called Tony O'Donoghue, did a lot of radio. And he went over to the newsroom to kind of, RTE at those times in like the mid 90s didn't do sports news on their kind of 6-1 news program or on the weekend programs, but they decided to do it in 95. And Tony was taken from radio over to television, and that left, that opened a gap up in the radio thing. So look, I just kind of went in there. I had been applying for years and years and years trying to get in, and eventually kind of, I think I wore them down, and they were like, oh, to shut this fella up, let's get him in here. And then it just kind of went from there, did the radio stuff, fell into the commentary by accident. I'm trying to think, I did a couple of commentaries on the radio. I never really thought I would do that. I didn't really think I had the skills to do it, because, you know, I suppose you idolize George Hamilton and Jer Canning and Marty and Jimmy for so long, and you kind of think, no, I can't do that. I'll just read out the stuff. I used to go to matches and do reports and things. So, but that was only 30 seconds, and you were just talking. You weren't really commentating on anything. So, you know, it kind of fell into it by accident. Somebody reminded me this the other day. The first ever soccer commentary I did was with a guy called Dave Tilson, who we used to play in the League of Ireland, legend for Bohemians. And I actually met him at an event last year. I can't remember where. But we did the first commentary in Belfield, the old Belfield. It's not called the Belfield Bowl. It was Belfield Park. I think there's apartments or student accommodation built on it now. But this was in 1997. And we were sitting out of the side, our legs dangling out of the side of a Hi-Ace van with the doors open, sound engineer sitting behind us. And, you know, maybe 10 or 11 people at the match. UCD didn't get good crowds back in those days. They thought that the students would all turn up, but they'd all go home for the weekend, you know. Mm. So yeah, we did that, and it was disastrous. I think I was absolutely shocking. And my first television commentary was pretty crap as well, actually. So anyway, I had a lot of help to try and get me sort of right for that. And that was a long time ago, but fun memories.
A lot to go in there. That one that you said, as you said yourself, was crap. Can you remember the first one you covered, darling?
Yeah, it was that UCD Bowls match in Belfield.
Was that the light?
Yeah, it was live, and I was absolutely terrified, because I kind of thought, I was like, I can't do this. What am I doing? I don't know how to do this. And they were just going, no, we want you to do it. And like, I suppose, you know, there's an element of the sink or swim thing. You know, let's see if you can do this. And if you can't, well, then we just send them back to reading out sports bulletins. But if you can, well, we can work with them a bit. So we did a good bit of that on radio. I remember going to Cyprus in 1998 with Brian Kerr's under-18s. When they won European Championship, that was I think that was in July, and in May they'd won the under-16s in Scotland with Liam Miller played on. Was Liam Miller on that team? I'm not sure. Poor Liam, the late great Liam Miller. John O'Shea was certainly on that team. Graham Barrett, I think, was on at the 16s, and then the 18s was Liam George. And like we until recently, I think Spain did it a few years ago. We were the only team to win the 16 and 18s doubles. I think it's become. Is it 17s and 19s now? I'm not sure. But yeah, Brian was the manager. So I did there were four games that we played, and I did the four of them on my own for 90 minutes from Cyprus. The final was shown live on RTÉ television. We beat Germany in the final. But yeah, they were great experiences. So, you know, that you kind of, you learn by doing, I suppose. So I don't know. No, I probably drove everybody mad and nobody listened, but they were significant matches, you know.
Come here. That matches like that, how do you prepare for that, Darren? If you're going into a big match?
Everybody has their own kind of different thing. Like, I'm very old-fashioned. I still want to write everything out. And, you know, I suppose if you're doing the commentary, everybody has their own kind of set routine. And I very much have my own routine. And there are kind of certain things that I will want to do before a match. And most of it, like I'd say 90% of it, I won't ever use. You won't, you know, because... I think there's that balance, which, like, you know, there's days I think I get it and other days I don't. There's a balance between, you know, giving people, you've done all this homework, and there's a temptation to kind of say, you know, I'm going to tell everybody what I know about this game, and I'm going to impress the hell out of them. But people don't want to hear all that stuff. You know, I think I'm always trying to find something that's a little bit different. So, you know, if like Conor McCarthy has been working a lot on shooting on his right foot or whatever in training, those kind of things. Not that he scored a million goals and a million points and, you know, he likes shredded wheat in the morning and drinking pina colada, you know, that kind of stuff. There's all you can, there's so much information out there. You can get whatever you want on anybody. Obviously all relevant. I don't mean anything irrelevant, but, you know, I think there's the balance between, you know, giving people something, maybe a one little nugget of information that they would like to have. So, I would have this whole routine of stuff. Like, you'll obviously you'll watch the last each two teams playing. You'll watch the last game that they've played. So that's kind of that's either 70 minutes or 90 minutes, just to get used to the players. What if you don't know them naturally, which you can't know everybody all the time. But if it's, you know, if somebody's wearing Puma boots or they have their socks up or their socks down or whatever it is, you know, just something different. If you don't, because you can't rely on the numbers. You've got to rely on the body shape or the haircut or facial features, obviously. And if they're back turned to you, sure, you might see the number. But, you know, they're kind of little tricks, I suppose, that we have, and everybody is different. So you might do, like, look, say the All-Ireland football final, I'd say I probably did about 20 hours of study for that last year. And I'd say I used about 10 minutes of actual stuff that was, you know, that I'd studied. But I go through that because it's my routine, and I know because I've done all those things that when I sit down to do the game, that I'm ready to do it. You know, I'm ready to kind of be in that game, because you are in it. They're just kind of little things that I would go through that once I know they're done, I can sleep okay the night before. I can get up and I can go to the match, and you're kind of you're ready for any eventuality, because you don't know. Okay, look, in a soccer match or in a football match or in a rugby match, there's only three things that can happen. Somebody wins, somebody loses, or it's a draw. So you can get ready for those three scenarios. Now, I'm not necessarily talking about sort of scripting things. Some commentators I hear are very, you know, they'll script these beautifully crafted bits of prose. I don't have the kind of the command of the English language to do or to kind of carry that off. And I think I would like to think that whatever you need will come to you naturally. Some days it doesn't, some days it does. And like I always think, sort of the best lines of commentary, like "the nation holds its breath," George's iconic line from Genoa. Like, he didn't write that down beforehand. That wasn't planned. It just came to him. And it's one of the, look, it's like what a big, massive moment of commentary that was. And like, everybody has their own sort of favorite bit, but that's just, you might think of something as to what, as I say, with those three scenarios, you might say, well, what happens if this is a draw? You might plan that out in your head. But like, you're only going to get to use one of them. So you don't want to be scrambling around at the end of like the greatest match of all time, and you're going, where's that bit of paper that I wrote that really snappy line on? That's not going to work. It's either in there or it's not going to work for me. It does work for other people. That's fine.
Trav, do you want to come in there?
Can I ask Dara? Yeah. So you mentioned a couple of people there, and I want to bring them back because they definitely would have been involved when you first started with North EE. Three giants of your industry, George Hamilton, and then two late greats, Bill O'Herlihy and Jimmy McGee. So what can you give us a bit about, like, so I presume they are people that you look up to and have done?
Oh, massively. Like, look, I still, you know, you would, Bill was like the greatest. I like him and Gay Byrne were the two greatest broadcasters I've ever seen. Now, you know, and again, I suppose we all have, it's like a generational thing. It depends on what age you are and what time you come from. So Bill was just amazing. Like, I interviewed Bill when I was in college in 1991, and like the three boys were at the peak of their powers at that time. It had really, you know, the Italian 90 and Eamon throwing the pen and all that stuff. And, you know, they were getting incredible viewers, and that lasted for years and years and years, which is an amazing thing in media and television. That's like, you know, when Eamon left and Johnny left, the lads were saying they did sort of 40 years there, which is amazing. Like, you look at the churn now, say on somewhere like Sky, you know, everything changes. And I know there's been a lot of changes in RTE over the last kind of 5 or 6 years, but like the longevity that they had and the engagement and the connection they had with the public was amazing. But like Bill was a huge support to me as a presenter, because again, I didn't think that when Bill was going to go that I'd be taking over his stuff or succeeding him. You could never replace Bill, but succeeding him. So he was just like, he was involved in that decision, and with the heads of sport at the time, and was an incredible support to me during Olympic Games. You know, there's, again, there's days when you're going, I can't do this, and you'd be terrified. This isn't going to suit me. And he, you know, he just kind of find the right way to calm you down, or to point you in the right direction, or, you know, all of those incredible abilities that he had. And I was only talking to somebody about it the other day, one of the Olympic Games, I think London in 2012 was his last Olympics, and the way the day was divided up, he would do the nighttime program. And like, the Olympics is the most amazing event to work on, but it's a savage kind of TV thing, or media thing, because you're just like, it's 16 days in a row, and it's, you know, 12, 14 hours a day. I remember one day we did in Rio, which included the Olympic final with Neymar scoring the fifth penalty and all of that stuff. And it was just like a fairy tale. But like, we were on the program I was doing was meant to be the sort of early afternoon, sorry, evening program. So it was meant to last from 6 until 12, but this lasted from 3 o'clock, and we finished at 1 the next morning. And, you know, you're sitting in the studio for like, you know, for 10 hours. But it was just amazing. But like, again, I just, in relation to Bill, I remember like being so tired in the middle of the London Olympics, and he had another job with his public relations company, which was hugely successful. And he would bound in, you know, like, hi, how's it going? And we'd all be hanging, you know. so there were all these trying to keep us all awake and stuff. But he just had the most amazing energy. But like, what a broadcaster, and what a lovely, lovely man. From when I met him, kind of that time when I was in college and interviewed him, and he was so helpful to me even back then, and didn't know me from Adam, and welcomed me into his office and in the middle of his day. And I interviewed him about working with John and Eamon. So yeah, again, George, massive support to me. I'm very lucky to call him one of my friends now, as well as a colleague, because like, I'm 51 years of age. So Euro 88, I was 15 when that happened. Italia 90, I was 17. Like, I was doing my intercert. We all remember that. Well, you might.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. No. You know, yeah, yeah, Scott Walton.
Leaving cert. So that was all in the middle of those two things. I don't like to talk about the results, but we do remember. You know, and then like Jimmy, like George is just like the most amazing, the best English speaking commentator. I'd have him and Martin Tyler as my joint number ones. And I love listening to both of them. And again, I would have met Martin Tyler, and just, again, a really nice man. And just like, you know, the first day I met him, he gave me his card. Here's my home number. Here's my mobile number. If you ever need anything, he actually said it was Jimmy McGee had told him I was coming. I'll get to the Jimmy story in a minute. But he was just so nice and so helpful. So, you know, again, brilliant people. And then Jimmy, oh God, when I was doing the hospital radio thing in up the road in Beaumont, we used to like, it was weird. Like, it was like a proper radio station where we had like, you know, there was a playlist machine, and there was a roster for people. It wasn't just computers or tapes back in the day, cassette tapes that you put into these machines. Again, we've lost Scott here. He's gone over.
Yeah, I was going to say that Scott has no idea what we're talking about. Yeah.
MP3, MP4, go away. That's not as much fun. And people are going back to vinyl now and everything. But somebody heard Jimmy McGee was coming to the hospital, and that I was going to interview, you know, Darry, you like sport, you interview Jimmy. So we kind of got him on the corridor, dragged him into the studio, and ended up interviewing him about GAA and stuff. And he was talking, you know, the Offaly footballers were okay at that time. And my dad's local club in Offaly is called Shannon Bridge. And a lad from Shannon Bridge, for the first time in like 30 years, had played on the Offaly team the previous day or the previous weekend. And of course, I mentioned this to Jimmy, and he said, do you know who the last fellow to play for Offaly from Shannon Bridge was? And that was 30 years ago, and that was this guy. So then I ended up working with him. And he was just, again, just such an amazing person, never mind broadcaster, but, you know, incredible boundless energy as well. Loved what he did, loved traveling all over the world. Like, that was his kind of drug, you know, to go and his addiction, I suppose. Drug is the wrong word, but he just went everywhere at all these major events, an event junkie. So in 1999, Jimmy was, he had some ill health and wasn't able to travel to the matches anymore. And they sort of said to him, look, you're not be able to, because some of the commentary positions in the English grounds, they're not that way now, most of them. But like, they were, you know, you'd be okay, you have to climb up that 30-foot ladder and get up there on the top of that stand at Selhurst Park or wherever it is. And because Jimmy had, it was well known at the time, he had a triple heart bypass. And they said, look, you're not going to be able to travel for a while. in that year, so 99, it was the year after Man United won the Champions League. It went to two nights a week. It was one night a week, so it was going to be on a Tuesday and a Thursday, so they massively expanded the competition. And Jimmy wasn't going to be able to travel anymore, so they needed another commentator. And three or four of us went for the audition, and I was lucky enough to get it. And I've been getting away with it ever since. So, they're three icons, the three of them, you know, when you think of that.
Excellent. Scott, I suppose we better bring you in. Welcome to the podcast, Scott. Have you any questions for Darren?
Yeah, look, Darren, obviously talking about iconic voices there in Irish sport, and they called iconic games. I was just wondering, probably top of the list would be the last World Cup final, but in terms of your career, what iconic games that stick to you throughout your career?
I'm trying to think. Like, okay, the World Cup final, and there is a sort of, a recency bias in that. Like, that's, I remember at the end of that game kind of thinking, that's the greatest game I've ever seen. Well, actually the greatest 20 minutes, because the first 70 minutes were sort of rubbishy, I remember, yeah, the problem with that was you're going, like, no game I ever watch will ever be like this again. You know, it'll be a 0-0 draw or a 0-0 bore in minus 10 degrees somewhere. But no, look, it's not like that. But that was just an amazing kind of experience, that whole thing. And I know I was at the gym. Sorry, I'm sitting here in the Argentina shirt. I do have a France one as well, and an Ireland one, and a Germany one and stuff. No, that was an amazing match. That really was just very, very special, the whole thing. And like, actually, I suppose like Netherlands-Argentina before that was the quarterfinal. That was pretty amazing as well. So that was, and again, I'm just trying to think, a couple of Ireland games. Richard Dunn, do you remember the night with, I think, Kieran Murray, the physio, drawing the number on the back of his shirt in Moscow?
Yeah.
Now, I know we drew 0-0, but like, we probably, but for Richard Dunn and Shea Given, like, we probably could have lost 8-0 that night. That was in 2011. There have been some mad games, some brilliant games, obviously. You've kind of put me on the spot with that. I remember doing Barcelona and Chelsea in, was it 09, Champions League semi-final? Iniesta scored in the last minute. Chelsea were kind of robbed. They had, I think like Barcelona should have had a player sent off. Abidal, I think, from memory. And I haven't thought about this game in a long time, so you put me on the spot. But I remember Iniesta scored late on, and Barcelona got to the final and beat Man United. That was Pep's first Champions League in Rome. Do you remember Messi scoring a header, like 5'6",
yeah,
jumping above, I think it might have been John O'Shea, who's a lot taller than him. But that was the start of that brilliant Barcelona team, and all the stuff that they did. I'd have to think about it a bit more. That there is, with the World Cup final, that sort of overshadows the wrong word, but that sits on top of everything else. So I can't really. I can't think of any other games. Oh, I will probably later. I'll ring you back in about an hour. I'll have a few more games that I can throw in. But look, listen, any day you get paid to go to these incredible venues and watch these fantastic teams, I'll take that any day, to be honest.
Yeah, I remember watching that Chelsea-Barcelona game. I'm a United fan myself.
Okay.
And I remember jumping up and down seeing Iniesta score, because I did not want to face Chelsea.
I know, because 2 weeks exactly, because you thought, you know, you're not going to beat Chelsea for the second year in a row in the final. Yeah, I know. I remember there was all sorts of mad things went on in that game, I think. But like Iniesta, it was the last kick of the match pretty much. And he scored down in front of the 500 Barcelona fans who were there, you know. So, very good. Good recall.
Darren, we never asked you, who is your team?
I'm not telling you that.
Wow, I knew you said that.
I'll tell you what, in League of Ireland terms, Shelburne. Yeah, because I grew up fairly near there, and I would be pally with Damien Duff. So Argentina and Shelburne.
Right. We'll go with that. Mm. Come here, Dad. Just going back onto the commentary, how much has it changed over the years, as you were talking about Jimmy McGee there and climbing up ladders and standing in the cold and the John Motson coats on and the big mics? How much has it changed now over the years? Are you, it's commentary now, are you sitting in the studio watching it through monitors, or are you still standing in the cold?
I mean, you're still standing in the cold, and you're delighted to do so because you're actually at the match. There are days, and it's like a finance thing, and most of the broadcasters do it now where you're not traveling anymore because it's just too expensive. And you have to, you know, depending on who the broadcast or who the kind of what the competition is, if it's UEFA or FIFA or stuff like that. They're good. They charge you a fortune. And look, that's the way they make their money. Nobody has any problem with that. But yeah, there is an element of that, that some of it's done. They call it off tube. So you're sitting looking at these monitors. It's a hard way to do it, particularly if it's live, because invariably, like there's one incident per half that you will, that will happen, and you'll go, I can't see that, you know, and like, how are you expected when you're not there? And look, it is a hard way of doing it, because, you know, I always think when you're at the match, like, as much as describing the action, you're trying to describe all the other bits around us, you know, the temperature, the weather, the crowd, the noise. And like, one of the many things that I would try and do is, like, if you're watching a match, if you're watching, say, we're doing Bayern and Lazio on the telly tomorrow night, and like, the commentator, you want the commentator to describe a load of things, but like, you want to know what's going on outside the four sides of the TV screen, because you can see I can see what you can see, but I think, you know, you want to get a little bit more. But look, as time goes on, it's become harder and harder, because it just costs so much. It's a big deal to get a group of people, you know, if it's London, fine, or it could be in Europe or further afield, you know. So it doesn't happen all the time, but there are very valid reasons for it. And you know, the ironic thing is, most people don't notice if you're there or not there. They really don't. And that's a shame, but that's the way, you know. People want to, you know, they don't, like, we never say that we're there, or we never say we're not there, but we're just describing the action. But it is a reality now for every broadcaster out there. Sky have been doing it for years. I remember seeing, this might be 10 years ago, when Sky did the Spanish football. And Jerry Armstrong, who I've been really lucky to work with, is a lovely fella and a great broadcaster. And he was doing the commentary on whoever it was in La Liga. And then he popped up in the studio at halftime doing the panel. And I'm going, okay, well, you're definitely not there. but it's just a finance thing. You know, it's money. Mm. And, you know, everybody's finding money tight at the moment. So there you go.
Trev, do you want to jump in there?
You mentioned, well, I have two questions, but one is about is about exactly that, the atmosphere. So, you know, you can't be being at a match. You just can't. And I know we already spoke about the best match was probably the World Cup final, for obvious reasons. But what was, name one of the best atmospheres that you've been in. It doesn't necessarily have to be the biggest game, as we all know. You know, you get in the moment, the commentator can bring you there through the telly, absolutely. But also when you're there yourself and you're feeling the emotion. You're trying to control yourself because you can easily go with it, and you're trying to get your point across. So how do you do that, and what sort of game would it have been?
I know, but you know what? There's no real. I don't think there's any real problem with going with the emotion. I think that's what a commentator does. You know, whether you know, you kind of like the waves of it, the peaks and the troughs, and just go with it. I think if you don't go, in my view, if you don't go with the emotion of it, you don't get carried away. But you just kind of let it carry you along. So you're not going to be sitting there like a cheerleader and, you know, and start chatting. Mm. But I think you've got to kind of connect with the emotion of the crowd when you're there. Because if you do that, it helps people who are watching or listening just to get more involved in it. So, yeah, some of the World Cup atmospheres. Now, we were there. Myself and George were out there for the month or whatever it was. And we'll be in Germany this summer for the Euros. But some of the atmospheres were kind of unusual at those matches because, like, not that many people from Europe travelled, you know, because there were so many doubts about it and so many issues about, you know, the human rights record and safety and all those things, you know. But, like, we didn't have any issues in that regard and didn't see any flashpoints or problems. Some people did, of course, I know that. But, like, it's, like, atmospheres, God, like, you know, All-Ireland Final Day in Croke Park is always awesome. I know the atmosphere last year wasn't brilliant, but the year before, Galway and Kerry was absolutely fantastic. You know, any of those games, like Kerry and Dublin matches, the 2013 All-Ireland semi-final was probably the best GAA match I've ever seen, because that was just like, you know, an incredible contest between two brilliant teams. And then, like, in the English stuff, you know, look, when the old Lansdowne Road, Ireland and Holland, sorry, I have to say the Netherlands, I get into trouble if I say Holland, Ireland and the Netherlands in 2001, the McAteer goal, like, that atmosphere that day was just awesome, because, like, there was a brilliant, brilliant Dutch team. Van Gaal was the manager, you know, Van Nistelrooy, all of these guys, brilliant, brilliant players. And Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, I think. Was Van Nistelrooy involved? I'm not sure. Maybe it might be a bit early for him, or maybe not, but like just incredible Dutch talent. And then our team, and like Keane whacks over Mars after about 5 minutes and the whole thing changes. So that was the old Lansdowne Road. And like there have been, like Ireland beating Germany, that was an incredible atmosphere that night, the Shane Long goal. You know, I think it was our only shot on target, but hey-ho, it doesn't matter, we won. You know, those kind of things. Anfield, actually, on a European night, I'm trying to think, Steven Gerrard scored against Olympiacos. This is going back. This is 2005 when they won. It's real name on the trophy stuff. When they came from behind to beat Olympiacos to go through and get out of the group stages. And we were sitting in the stand at Anfield. And when he scored very late. I think they were 1-0 down or something. It looked like they were going out. And Gerrard scored. And the stand we were in, we were actually at the match, just started to rock. Like it was moving. It was shaking is probably a better description. Yeah, that was incredible that night. So Anfield on a big European night is pretty remarkable. It's an amazing place to see. And I think actually, and Scott, you'll remember this. So the 2008 Champions League semi-final, Man United beat Barcelona and Paul Scholes scored. And we were doing the commentary on the match there. And again, that was just pure tension because I think the United fans started waving the white handkerchiefs, which is a real Barcelona thing, real Spanish football thing. But it was just pure tension. And you could feel, you know, it was like as if the crowd, like in Anfield with Gerrard was different, but there was just tension all around the place. It was like they were afraid to kind of go mad because it, like Barcelona were, you could feel they were the coming team at that time. And you know, all the talent that they had and all the young players, and it was just like, you know, it'll only take a second for these fellas to score a goal. So that was kind of pure tension, really big tension. What else? Yeah, and that's sort of it. Like they're the ones I've experienced. I haven't been at that many. I love rugby, but I don't get to cover rugby. So some of the World Cup matches, I wouldn't have mind been at the Ireland South Africa match in Paris. But anyway, yeah. I think that was for different reasons, the night out or something after it, you know.
Would you ever get to go to a match as just a fan?
Yeah.
Would you enjoy it? Just go to a match,
yeah,
shoulders down, relax, and actually enjoy it. And would you feel yourself commentating in your own head?
No. If you were at it? No, that's a good question. But okay. I do, like, again, like I haven't done it this season because I haven't been able to. But as a pal of mine is a big Shelburne fan, so I've gone down to a few of the games down there. But, like, if those things are on your doorstep, like, I went to, you know, the with the new split season, I got to see a load of Dublin Championship matches last year. And it was handy, but I suppose I was kind of working at some of them because I knew we were doing a couple of the games later on in the Championship. Yeah, you would get, absolutely. I love nothing better and go down and just sit there or stand there and watch. There's nothing like being at a game. But I don't commentate in my head.
I have to say, I don't know how you do that. Clearly, I'm not a commentator, but I get kicked out of rooms when I'm watching matches at home because I commentate along. So for you not to be able to have that control and not do it is actually impressive. There's no way that doesn't happen in my house.
I know. Maybe you need to watch it on your own.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, possibly. one other question I have for you, Dara, is we brought up the and it's out there now. So obviously with the John O'Shea you mentioned there a few minutes ago. So obviously we're all wishing him well. And Brian Kerr coming in and some sort of impact, some sort of impact would be major impact, no doubt, knowing Brian Kerr. Yeah. Look, again, I'm not going to ask you how. Like, I mean, we've a couple of games coming up, looking good. Good idea. Look, obviously, to get the right person. What can you do?
Well, look,
you know,
I think there were kind of moves today, reading between the lines of some of the stuff that happened. Because, like, you know, we're talking on Monday. John met the press today and that sort of thing. And like, look, I'm lucky enough to have met him a few times, and I'm a huge fan of him as a person. Loved watching his football career, and like for an Irish guy to achieve all he achieved, you know, how many Premier Leagues did he win? Was it three or five? Maybe I'm sure. But you know, like Champions Leagues and playing in finals and all that stuff. And like going back all the way to, I mentioned about the under-16s in Scotland, like he was on that team and the progression with him, and just that he's always been so approachable, and such a nice fella. Now look, nice guys and girls don't make great managers, or not all the time, but I think just the FAI, like this process has taken a long time and people have got annoyed with it. People are annoyed that stuff isn't leaking out, but you know, the which I think is ironic, you know, like they have kept it very tight. It obviously, it matters to the people, obviously in the FAI, but it matters to the people in who are being spoken to. So this is just a kind of holding pattern. In an ideal world, the head coach, as they call him now, would be taking these two friendlies, but it hasn't worked out that way. And I suppose, look, I just give it, I suppose we'll give it time and let it settle. And I think it's worth the wait if they get the person that they want. And this is a big appointment for, you know, the new director of football in the FAI and for the chief executive, because like Stephen Kenny wasn't their appointment. This person will be. They've already appointed Eileen Gleeson as the women's senior team manager, and she's done really well. But that's their, you know, Eileen is their appointment. This person, whoever it is, Lee Carsley or whoever, this person will be their appointment. And, you know, the success or otherwise kind of will reflect on the hierarchy in the FAI, you know. So they have to get it right. And the fact that they've waited so long, you know, to over 100 days to get the person that they want, would lead you to believe that they're confident that this person, whoever it is, will do a good job. And like we know there's so many talented young players there. Hmm. You know, like Stephen Kenny was unlucky on so many fronts, with COVID and people sitting beside people on planes and all that sort of thing, you know. And look, the results didn't work. I'm very fond of Stephen. I met him at a function last year and had a good chat with him and stuff. And you know, it just didn't work out. But he's such a nice man, and I hope that whatever happens next for him, and he will be back working in football. There's absolutely no doubt that it's a success, and he had unbelievable success at Dundalk. When you consider what happened with that team, taking them from near extinction all the way to competing at a massive level in European football, that's a massive achievement, you know.
That's it. Scott, anything you want to throw in there?
Yeah, no, I'm going to circle back. Darryl, you mentioned that you would have loved to commentate on the Rugby World Cup. Is there any other sporting event that you haven't done that's kind of on the bucket list that you're thinking maybe give a go at commentate, maybe a Super Bowl or a basketball game, maybe a sport people don't know about?
No, do you know what? Not really. I'd love to go to all of those things, Scott, that you've mentioned. I'd love to go to the Super Bowl. I'd love to go to the Masters. You know, I've done a bit of stuff at the Olympics. Is always kind of, okay, you're doing the presenting, but you might get a few curveballs thrown at you in terms of, like, I've done hockey commentaries at the Olympics. I did some of the canoe kayak events, which was scary because I was like at that stage, I couldn't even swim. And I'm going, here, I'm talking about kayaking and stuff, you know. I've learned how to swim over the last 6 months. That was on my bucket list. But no, I don't think so. Like, I think our lot have been quite sensible with me in terms of what we've done. So, like, the big three in this country are soccer, GAA and rugby. And I love rugby. But I do soccer and I do GAA, and quite rightly, I believe that the sort of decision was taken at the time that if you go and do rugby, and I've done a couple of rugby matches because people were like, when George was sick in 2011, that's how I ended up in Russia doing the Ireland Russia game, the Richard Dunn thing, because George was out of work for a while. And like the decision was taken at the time, if you do rugby, they're the big three. Okay, it's a four, but you know what I mean, with the hurling and Gaelic football. You leave yourself open to, like, does he actually know about any of these? Is he just chancing his arm at everything? Like, it's great being, like, it's a bit, I suppose, a bit like the versatile footballer. It was something that was thrown at John O'Shea, that he had too many, he played well in too many positions, like midfield, left back, right back, centre back. You know, I think he may have been, didn't he play in goal one day? I think, or was that
he did, yeah. He did.
And now Quinn did it too and saved a penalty. But it's like the versatile player that it's, oh, well, he can do anything. But like, what can you do really well? And which is your favourite position? And you're just kind of always going, oh, well, you know, he'll play there. So that I think that was a right decision that was taken at the time, that don't do rugby and keep the soccer in the GA. Like, I've got to present boxing. Bernard Dunn winning his world title in 2009 was just unbelievable. Same day as Ireland won the Grand Slam in Cardiff. So, yeah, look, I've done all the... Again, I love golf. I try and play golf, but you know, you've all these things going on. I'd love to go to the Masters and just see how hilly that place really is, because everybody keeps saying it. It's like you come off it upside down, but you don't really see it on the TV. Super Bowl, again, love to, but $5,000 a ticket, be like, nah, I don't think so. I think take a round the world trip instead, and nobody would invite me to the Super Bowl. But yeah, I think I'm happy enough with the stuff that I've done and the kind of route that I'm on. I don't have any kind of mad ambitions to go and commentate on something crazy, you know.
Can I ask a question there, Darragh? The VAR, right? It's a topic of discussion across many issues. Yeah. Well, as in commentating, do the commentators seem to get a judgment before? Are you getting something in your ear when the decision's being made, or how are you finding out?
No, what'll happen is, like, let's say you have a monitor in front of you that like, say, at the UEFA games, they have, okay, you have the match monitor where you're seeing the same pictures that you're seeing at home. And then it's a stats channel. So it'll have the two teams on it, and it's part of what UEFA do, and they do it very well. And there's all this bits of information on it. It'd be like if you open the Champions League app when you're watching the game tomorrow night, you'll get all that stuff on it. And that's available to us in the stadium as well. Like, you know, when you're commentating, you can't. I'll just hang on a second now. You just chat away amongst yourselves. I'm going to have a look at the Champions League app and see how many attacking entries Barcelona have made into, you know, it's just not going to, you can't do it while you're commentating. That's sort of for other people. But you have on this stats channel, what will come up is just this big bar in red writing with a gray kind of border around it, and it just says VAR, and there, you know, VAR decision. So they will look at this. And we can nearly tell now with you see the referees and putting their fingers to their ears and all that stuff, and the inevitable thing if there's a controversial decision and the referee goes over to have a look at it on the monitor, 99.9 times out of 100, you know, it's either going to be a penalty for handball or whatever. You know, the offside thing is very clinical, but like if you know, 1 millimeter of your big toe is offside, you're offside, according to this new thing. So we're not getting any audio information. We're not hearing the referee. I think that would help them, actually, if we were able to hear the conversations with the referee. I think inside the stadium particularly, I think it would help, because like it just causes a lot of unrest, and you see players celebrating like mad, and then you're going, oh no, they're going to overturn the goal. So yeah, I started out being a big fan of it because, you know, like you go back to the Germany goal in the World Cup in 2010, that's nearly where it all came from, that one. Remember was the England goal, the ball miles over the line. It was Frank Lampard in South Africa. Yeah. I remember working with Liam Brady on that, and we had, that was the summer after the Thierry Henry handball, and Liam was just apoplectic that day, and rightly so, because of what had happened and what Ireland lost out on because of Terry Henry or Thierry Henry. So yeah, that's where it came from. I think I'm not as big a fan of it as I used to be, particularly with the handball thing. Like, I don't know what the hell a handball is now anymore. Raise your hand in an unnatural position, ball to hand, hand to ball. You know, there was the Zuma one yesterday for West Ham, and you know, okay, fair enough, you're in an unnatural position. But like, I remember actually one of the World Cup matches, I can't remember what team it was. It might have been Uruguay. And I probably won't be able to explain this properly, but a penalty was given because a Uruguayan player inside the penalty area kind of fell backwards, but he fell on the ball. But he you're not going to just let yourself just fall, you know, to your instinct, the fight or flight thing, your reflexes, you'll try and support yourself. So he put his two hands down behind him and one of them touched the ball and the penalty was given. But like, what could the fella do? I'm going to just fall down now, perhaps hit the back of my head, give myself a concussion. You know, I there's where things have gone a bit screwy, I think. You know, like that guy had, you know, like as my God, as toddlers, that's the natural instinct in you as a human being, that if you fall or you trip, you're going to try and support yourself and try and protect yourself a bit, whether it's this way or that way, you know? So like, yeah, I don't know. The handball thing is a mess. It really is. I think, they need to simplify that down. And okay, the decision times are getting a little quicker, but still there's several decisions you go, no, don't agree with that. But that's a very long way, Paul, of answering your question. And so we don't get any extra information.
No, it's a great answer. It's what throws my head in as well. Sometimes it's this still image. There's no common sense in the still image. I don't understand when you go to a still image and look at it and go, oh, that's blatant handball, or that's definitely a penalty, or he's definitely got him. And because anything on a still looks, you know, can be looked miles different from reality.
And like, then there's the other thing, when you see a tackle in slow motion, it always looks worse, you know? So it's like this, I suppose we have all this technology now, and we have all these things we hope will assist us. And, you know, that's great. But a lot of the time it's just made it more complicated and made it more difficult to come up with a common sense decision. You know, like the offside thing. Yeah, I get. And, you know, I do think that's OK, because, like, you know, it's you're either offside or you're not. But the other stuff where any kind of an interpretation comes in, then you're in trouble, because you've got to have three people who agree. And then the fourth is on the pitch. You know.
I have, sorry, Dara, before we go, because I'm conscious of time, I have one more question, and it's, so Dunphy, Giles and Brady, right? Mm-hmm. We all know how amazing they were together, and they'll never be beaten, in my opinion. And we all know what went on camera, and we could see it, and it's, you look at YouTube and you see all these clips, and they're always coming up. Can you give us an idea of a time or a moment or something like that with regards to those three, or one of those three, that you can kind of tell us that we wouldn't know?
No, not really. Like, there were no secrets with the guys, you know what I mean? Like, what you saw on the television was what you saw, you know, what was happening behind the scenes. Like, I loved working with the three of them. And, you know, they you always knew that you had to be on top of your game when you were working with them, that they would take you to a place that other panelists wouldn't. And like, they challenge you and push you, and but all in a good way, not in a bad way at all. And I loved working with them. Like, I learned so much from them. Like, I remember when I started doing the stuff, so this would be the mid-noughties, and John Giles said, look, I can help you with some of this stuff. And I got the cassette tapes. Again, Scott, a video cassette, VHS. I got a few of the tapes. I used to do it on a regular basis, and I'd go to John's house. He used to have a place where he stayed over in Rathgar, and we'd sit and we'd watch the tapes for hours, and he'd go, I don't like the way you did that. Don't like the way you did that. Like that. Do more of that. Yada, yada, you know. So he was a huge help to me with all of that stuff. So that's the kind of, you know, it wasn't just they would rock up and you know, best of luck with a pal, see how you go. But it was a collaborative thing, you know, and like, they were just amazing to work with all the time.
I've no more questions on, well, I do, I've millions of questions, but I'm not going to take any more, because I'm conscious of your time. Lance, have you any more questions before we let Dara go, or
one are you happy to stay?
Yeah.
One for the road. So the Apre match sketches, they were very accurate, were they, back in the day then, Dara?
Depends what you mean by accurate, Scott. Accurate.
No. I'm surprised he knows who Apre Match is, Dara. Like, we're you know, that's a while ago now.
On YouTube as well. I got a few bad doings on that, but when you look at them now, I think they're really funny. When you're in the middle of it, you're like, oh my God, you're mortified. But like, again, none of us ever left the studio. You know, the credits would roll, and then you'd know this was coming on. So we all sat there. None of us moved. I was called a limousine driver one of the days. I'm over it now, though. Dara just wants to have fun with the lads.
I have one more question for you, Dara, before we go. How did you get into Irish Fitness Family, and are you enjoying that?
Oh, I love it. My God. I've done it. I think this was the 11th year of it. I don't know if it's coming back next year or this year coming. And it started, like a lot of these things, it started out as an accident. So, a pal of mine who I know said to me, look, these guys are putting in this proposal. David Fitzgerald is involved in it. They filmed some stuff, but they want to know what you would need to put on it as the commentator. I said, yeah, look, I'll go and meet you one of the days and we'll see. And they were like, what information would the commentator need? And I said, well, if you're gonna do it like a sort of a sporting event, you'll need the, you know, obviously names, ages, where they're from, what they do, what kind of sporting skills that they have, all of those things, right? So I just put this list together, and then they said, come in and we did put a commentary on it. This was like a pilot, so there's no guarantee that this was ever going to see the light of day on television. So they just kind of said, look, let's see how this goes. And I put the commentary on it, and it just sort of, it took off from there, you know, and it's grown. Like, it's, I'm amazed at how, like, COVID was really important to it. Like, that was a nightmare for them doing it. For them making the program, because just everything, you know, if we were right, not in the middle of COVID, I think, I'm trying to remember the kind of times of the year, but like, they had to follow all the protocols, obviously, and, you know, these family bubbles, and nobody could interact with each other. And it was very hard for them to make it. But no, I love doing it. And like, listen, if you can describe somebody getting stuck in 6 foot of sludge in the middle of a bog in County Meath, and you can make it sound coherent, that's actually, it's good practice for when, like, a football match is easy compared to that then.
Yeah.
But it's great fun. And it's like, look, I don't, and maybe I'm blasting away a myth here about it. Like, they filmed that all summer and we start putting the commentaries on it in October. So I've never met anybody who's on the program. I've never seen any of the events live. And it's funny because you kind of get to know them from seeing the stuff, you know. Like, by the time, I think it takes us about 3 hours to do each episode with the commentary. And most, I think the longest one, like, there's ad breaks and stuff in it, so maybe an hour and 10 minutes or something. I think when they start early on, it's like an hour and a half episodes, but there's ads in, you know, through the program. So yeah, I really enjoy, I love doing it, and the great people that make it, it's made by a company outside of RTE.
Can I just say it earlier? I meant to say that for this family, there's not a lot of things that families do sit down and watch anymore. Like, there is one or two, you know, the Saturday Night, like, Scott, this is going to be lost in you, blankety blank, all these things. Well, that's actually back now, so he probably does.
I
know,
I love that. Yeah.
But, like, you know what I mean? There are all these programs, but that particular program brings my particular family together. We all sit in, we watch it, and giving you credit on it as well. Obviously, it can be quite tense because there is moments where they're neck and neck, but this brings it back to the whole commentary thing. And you're not going to say it yourself, but the commentary that you put onto it is just like, at some point you'd be standing up off the couch, you'd be like, go on. And it's because of what you visually see, but also what you hear. And it comes together.
To hear. And look, but you know, the couple of the producers that I do it with, like, they're incredibly supportive. They're like, they're very fussy, you know, like, it's not as, they want it to be perfect, and I want it to be perfect too, you know, but they'll come back and say, no, don't like the way you said the word arms there. Can you go again? And go, well, like, there's no script for this. This is just say what you see. And there's times when it'll, like I said, some of the outtakes, I'd love to share those with you. If you want some TV goals, there's a few of them. But you know, it has that remarkable appeal. It's like, it's been sold, like, the company have sold it in various countries around the world. I think some places in South America where they wouldn't be as into the old health and safety as we are here. You know, hanging off the side of a building, you'd be grand. But no, that wouldn't that wouldn't happen in this country. But and rightly so. But, like, you know, I'm amazed it's never kind of really taken off in England, in the UK, because it's family entertainment, and it has this appeal for people from, it's like Winning Streak years ago, if you remember that program. Scott's gone again. 8 to 80, that appeal from 8 years of age up the way to 80, so that the grandchild can watch with the grandfather or mother. You know, so it is, because it's just, it's families, and we can all see ourselves going, you know, I'd love to do this, and I wonder, could I get my family to do it and all that sort of thing. Like, it's funny, last year's episode, or one of the episodes early on, I was joking earlier about learning how to swim, and at 51 years of age, I didn't know how to swim. Well, I kind of did when I was younger, but somebody decided in the pool up in Northside when we were doing swimming lessons in school, wouldn't it be real fun if we held the little chubby fella down under the water for 3 minutes and see if he can float? Anyway, that was me with water done. Forget it. And one of the episodes this year, they were in Rathbeggan Lakes, which isn't that near Dunshaughlin? Yeah. I was in years ago with my son fishing. That's another story. I won't go into that one. So this lady had a life jacket on. Again, all the health and safety stuff, like, it's all, you know, it's all perfectly run. Everybody is safe and all that sort of thing, which is the main obstacle of the exercise. So this girl had a life jacket on. She was the mother in one of the families. And the producer said to me, she said, look, this girl is terrified of water. And they had to jump across these lily pads on the lake. Like, absolutely. She said, this girl's terrified of water. She cannot swim. She doesn't mind you saying that she's terrified of water, because they checked with her. And I was doing this going, oh my God, this is going to be a real crisis for her if she falls into the water. And of course she fell into the water. And I was doing it, and in my head I was going, hang on, Derry Edith, you can't swim either. If you fell in the water, you'd be a disaster. So we made some comment about that. But then I said, right, I've got to go and learn how to swim. And I can float. The chubby fella still does float. it's just a brilliant program, and thank you for watching. Yeah. That's, hopefully it'll be back this year in 2024.
Absolutely. It better be. Yeah, no, it's excellent.
Please, God. Well, that's it. We'll wrap it up there, folks. Dara, come here. An absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Keep up your excellent work commentating wherever you are. We'll always be listening. You really are doing a fabulous job, and we commend you. So thanks for coming on to the show, mate.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Do it again soon.
Absolutely. Please come back. Cheers, mate.
How are you? Roddy Collins here. And I listen to This Is Football Podcast.